Welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall fame is at Rumors tonight. The early show tonight, 7:45 show, is sold out. There are a few tickets available for the 10:30 show, I believe. Contact Rumors at 488-4520 in case you want to see Dave Foley of Kids in the Hall. Last chance to see him tonight. Starting Tuesday, Reese Waters is appearing at Rumors. First three callers at 780-1290. First three callers at 780-1290. You'll win tickets to Tuesday night's show at Rumors to see Reese Waters. Again, the first three callers at 780-1290.
I got a little story for you. I don't know if I speak for you guys, but I grew up on Kids in the Hall.
You definitely don't speak for me.
I grew up on Kids in the Hall. I used to always watch Kids in the Hall. You know, I was a huge fan of that show. I was almost obsessed with that show, and I loved, obviously, we all grew up in SNL, too. So for me, the only shows I used to watch were SNL and Kids in the Hall. Dave Foley is a funny guy, and you should definitely go check him out if you have a chance. But Kevin McDonald, who's also part of Kids in the Hall, was on my plane back from Chicago to Winnipeg. From your wedding. Went from Kentucky to Chicago, Winnipeg, and he lives here.
He lives here now.
He either has a girlfriend or is married to someone from Winnipeg.
I believe that's the case.
Yeah, and he's also a very funny guy.
That's right.
See him around Winnipeg once in a while, but Kids in the Hall is great, and you know, definitely check out Dave Foley.
Exactly. Rumors. Best comedians in the world appear at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, so first three callers at 780-1290 can win tickets to that. Moving back to hockey, the Philadelphia Flyers, another disappointing year for the Flyers. Year in, year out, we say the same thing. And Paul Holmgren, general manager of the Flyers, had some pointed words in the exit meetings following their defeat in five games to the New Jersey Devils. Ilya Brizgalov, he pretty much said, cut it out. Pardon me for the Full House Dave Coulier pun there. But, you know, he said that, you know, this isn't Comedy Central is what his quote was. You know, this isn't Comedy Central. Put your head on straight. You know, play the game and stop talking too much.
Sure.
You know. Should the Flyers be surprised at what they got from Ilya Brizgalov
year? I don't know how much that decision to sign him was Paul Holmgren's. The rumors have it that it was Ed Snyder kind of saying, we need a goalie, just give him what he wants. Whether or not that's true, they clearly didn't do enough homework to learn more about Ilya Brizgalov, and this is kind of the guy he is. Now, he can tone it down a bit, don't get me wrong, but, you know, that's... I just think that's... They're coming back with this idea that he can be somebody and maybe he's not. And if you're going to give a guy, you know, anybody in any business does a general background check and they call references when somebody applies for a job. Excuse me.
Right.
So they apply for a job in any form of business. And you know, and what happens here is this is a guy that you're not hiring and you can just fire and give 2 weeks notice. You're signing him for 9-10 years. And you're giving him millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it seems like, in terms of background checks, they didn't do much of anything. And if that's the case, then the blame needs to go to the Flyers here. Now, some blame obviously needs to go to Ilya Brizgalov. He's being paid, and he's being paid to be a professional. But I think the blame needs to be shared. And the issue for Philly, of course, is you never give a goalie that long-term of a deal.
Let me ask you this question.
But the problem is now, is he, unlike Richards and Carter, he's not tradable. So he's there. And it's either you're gonna put him, send him to the minors, or he's gonna perform for you. But he's not, that contract in the next 5-6 years is completely untradeable.
It's almost a worse contract than Luongo's. I want to say something about Brizgalov.
It is worse than Luongo's.
And I really do not like to judge hockey players or anybody for that matter. But you know, from someone who's in the quote unquote media, you know, looking at how he answers questions and how he conducts himself, you know, Ilya Brizgalov definitely has some growing up to do, I'll say that. The way he entered the playoffs talking about answering questions and how he kind of doesn't really think, and this has nothing to do with dialect or anything like that. I'm just talking about the way he deals with questions, and it's his composure and his demeanor. And I mean, it's actually a little bit similar to John Tortorella. It's almost
cavalier.
It's cavalier. It's almost, you know,
flippant.
It is flippant, you know, but it's a little bit confrontational. to be honest with you. And, you know, people in the media, they have their job to do. You know, for the most part, I think I speak for, you know, a lot of people in the media when I say that most of the time we're not trying to get a rise out of anybody. We're trying to get, you know, the best possible answers we can for the people that are listening. You know, that would be for, you know, whether it's radio, print, or TV. And I think, you know, Ilya Bryzgalov this year, he had a little bit of an up and down season. There was some things that didn't go his way. And, you know, in the playoffs, he would tell you himself he didn't play the way he wanted to play, especially against the Devils. But he wasn't that great against Marc-Andre Fleury either.
I would say he was worse against Pittsburgh than he was against the Devils.
His numbers were worse.
It's true. Now, there was only one game he allowed less than 3 goals in the entire playoffs.
Right.
Gary Galli was going on about that. He just hasn't been very good. And the problem is Drew, he doesn't take his job seriously, and at least as far as we can tell. And, you know, there's a certain level of Marty Brodeur, don't let anything really bother you.
Great example.
And that's going to work. But at the same time, Marty Brodeur, you see the fire is there. So it's nothing really bothers him, but he still cares.
Bother Bryzgalov. You read his quotes to the Russian media, he said, "I wouldn't wish this year on anybody."
So, but he actually doesn't care. But he does care, and he doesn't seem to be working that hard to fix it. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But he's known to be a little bit of a. You know, we have heard stories about him kind of packing the bags before the season's over. Does he actually care? There's so many. I mean, this contract, forget his. If he was the best goalie in the league, arguably, the contract would have been awful.
Right.
So the fact that he wasn't very good this year and has demonstrated character issues, which some would say were present before and probably 100% were present before, makes it even worse.
If the NHL, in the next CBA negotiations, if every team is allowed to amnesty one player.
I hate that.
I know you hate that, but I'm speaking hypothetically here. If a team is allowed to amnesty one player, is there any way it's not Bryzgalov being amnestied from the Flyers?
No.
I mean, they're going to get out from under that contract immediately. Tell me they're not better off with Sergei Bobrovsky.
Well, especially if you take into account their salaries.
Well, I mean, and then you have to. Even straight on skill, you might be. You know, another player that came under some criticism from Paul Holmgren.
Yeah.
You know, Flyers winger James Van Riemsdyk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Holmgren, again, very pointed with his comments, pretty much said, you know, the guy's never healthy. Pretty much said the guy, you know, is never healthy in regards to that. In regards to his play, so it's hard to evaluate how good he is actually going to be or how good he actually is. He's never healthy. Looking at the Winnipeg Jets, who says no to a Toby Enstrom for James Van Riemsdyk trade?
Well, the question is whether Philly will do that trade. I mean, the idea that Philly could use a defenseman to replace Chris Pronger, they have guys like Coburn and Carl and Mezeros, and Timonen's getting a little bit older. Do they want to add a guy? I mean, do they look and target a guy like Byfuglien? Do they target a guy like Enstrom? But I think they're going to be in the market for that big defenseman or that puck-moving defenseman, one of the two. And I think that Van Riemsdyk is expendable, and I think the Jets need offensive talent. And they need more top six forwards. I think right now they have three, maybe four. And I'm not the biggest Brian Little fan, as you guys know. I think Kane and Ladd are top, you know, Kane will be the neck. Will be the top left winger next year? Ladd will be the second line left winger. Wheeler will be a top two line right winger. You know, who else do you have here right now? And you don't have. I mean, Little is maybe a okay second line center, but that's his highest point. And you don't have a first line center. And you don't really have another winger that can play in the top six. So a guy like that seems like somebody that the Jets would target. Now, he's got some term on his deal, and he's got some money left
on
his
deal. He's got 5 years left.
Yeah, but at the same time, you take into account his age. But you take into account his age, and it's all his prime years. So it's not as if you're paying him, you know, when Brad Richardson is 33 years old, 32 years old, and you're paying him big money. Something that they have to take into account, and I think something that might be a good match for both sides, whether or not they want to actually engage in discussions. His cap hit for Van Riemsdyk is 4.25 for the next 6 years. So, choose it to UFA in 2018.
You know, Drew, absolutely. I think if Chevy had a chance to make a move that made sense for the short term and the long term, he would make it. And James Van Riemsdyk is a type of player. There aren't a lot of players like him out there. I mean, he's got the size. He's got the offensive talent. He was a high draft pick. And the Flyers made a commitment to him. And one of the reasons why they traded Jeff Carter and Mike Richards, don't forget it for a second, was because of the emergence of James Van Riemsdyk.
23 years old.
They, you know,
and he starts his extension. He's still in his entry-level deal
right
year.
Now. Yeah, he hasn't hit his prime at all yet. He's a couple years away from his prime, even at 23.
If Philly's sick of him, if they're sick of his injury problems, and they need a defenseman, it seems that, you know, and Philly could, you know, Toby Enstrom is going to be UFA after this coming year.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to re-sign Toby to an extension, you got to deal him.
We've talked about that numerous times.
And, I mean, what's their stance on Byfuglien? I like Byfuglien. There are some drawbacks to his game. It depends on what you can get in return for him. I think they'd probably consider dealing him, too. Just thinking.
I just, you know, it struck me that reading Paul Holmgren's comments, and Remus will tweet him out via at Illegal Curve. He'll send out the article where, you know, they're not just your usual, they're pointed comments. And if the organization is that sick of him, maybe, you know, if they're sick of his injury problems, maybe this is a chance to pick up a top six, you know, left winger in the NHL on the cheap.
I think that they will certainly listen on Van Riemsdyk. I don't think there's any question about
that. You think Philly will certainly listen on him?
Would Toby Enstrom be enough to get him?
No, not with a pending, as a pending UFA, I would think you'd have to sweeten the pot a little bit, but nothing insane.
But so if it's Toby in a second, you still do it?
Oh, for sure, you do it for that, yeah. But I mean, it depends on also what Toby's, what a guy like Toby is asking for money-wise.
Sure.
And things like that. There's many factors, how much he's asking for money-wise and how much term he's asking for and what else do they want with that, and do they want a bigger forward? And there's many things to take into account, but I think a guy like Van Riemsdyk is a guy the Jets should be targeting. Young, talented forward with skill just hitting his prime, hasn't really been given that opportunity yet. You're getting a little bit of value there. Now, his 4.25 cap hit could prove to be good value, could prove to be a little bit of an overpay, but it's not $8 million.
Right.
I want to say one thing
and
before...
And he's not old. It's the prime of his career.
23.
Exactly.
It's prime just of his entering career. His prime right now.
Yeah.
On the topic of the Flyers, I just want to get this thing in quickly because we might not be talking about the Flyers for a little bit, but if you look at the Flyers season as a whole, including the playoffs, and you look at what some of these guys have done, and you look at the trading of Richards and Carter with the signing of Brizgalov, or maybe separate, first of all, and you look at the players that they got back in Voracek and Shen and Simmons.
Couturier
with the draft pick.
Good trades.
Right? They won that trade, those trades.
Yeah,
and those players performed well in the playoffs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you factor in that they got to the second round and the way they disposed of the Penguins, who were pre-playoffs Stanley Cup favorite.
Everybody's favorite.
I mean, things shouldn't be that bad in Philadelphia.
The future looks very bright.
And that's what surprises me, that they're looking at this like Brizgalov blew it, Van Riemsdyk wasn't healthy for the entire playoffs. Well, why don't you factor in that you made massive changes. Getting Mike Richards and Jeff Carter out of there, two guys that had been around since the lockout, the way that your team responded, you know, is a good thing. I mean, yeah, sure, they didn't play very well against New Jersey, and they lost, and the Devils deserve to win. But it seems like that things shouldn't be doom and gloom, and it almost seems like that in Philadelphia. And really, as far as
you're
I'm
right,
concerned, the future looks... With Brayden Schenn as a great hockey player, Jake Voracek had easily his best year. Mm-hmm. Wayne Simmons was excellent. I'm a big fan of Wayne Simmons. And Couturier, I mean, the sky's the limit for that guy.
You're going to get rid of Jagr. Jagr's slowed down.
Right, but, you know, those four guys,
Jagr
right there,
like this season
those four him. Guys... Yeah. Combined with Claude Giroux, who should have been an MVP candidate in my estimation. It was a tough year. And then you've got Danny Briere, who again had a good playoffs. And you've got Scotty Hartnuhl, as I've always loved. The forward group that they have there is excellent. Yeah, you need to pick up a defenseman. But as far as the future of a team, the Flyers almost have one of the brightest futures of any team.
That's right. And exactly. These guys are not only productive, Couturier productive, and Simmons productive, and Shen productive, but they're cheap.
We didn't even
Simmons
mention
makes 1.75, and Couturier and Shen are on entry level deals.
They're cheap and they're controllable.
We didn't even mention a guy like Matt Reed as a rookie who came out of the
good
University
point.
Of Bemidji who was
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
I mean, like the Flyers. Come
yeah,
on, the yeah, Flyers' yeah, future
had a,
looks good.
You had a big defenseman. You try and figure out that goaltending. Obviously, that'll be an issue.
Yeah.
We'll see about that amnesty. But you had a big defenseman in there to replace Pronger because they needed a defenseman. They need a strong, big time defenseman, and you can push everybody back a slot because Timonen's getting older.
Yeah,
Carl's not great defensively. I like Braden Coburn. But you still have some work to do back there. If you can add a big-time defenseman, which obviously doesn't grow on trees, I would not be shocked if they made somehow had a run at Suter, and then they dealt with the salary ramifications after. That seems to be what they do, is that they go for the guy, and then figure it out after.
Because you have a little bit of time.
And
in
it's not the worst strategy. I mean, they've been pretty good about getting guys before July 1 if they trade for them, like they did with Hartnell, like they did with Timonen.
Also, Shea Weber in Philly.
Yeah, Pronger can't retire, though. He has to. I mean, if Pronger retires,
that's a technicality, Drew. They just keep him on the roster, and they don't. Yeah.
That's right. If he actually files retirement papers, they're still on the hook for his $5 million contract
because they signed it after
he signed
him
after he was 35. Yeah. Yeah. So his $4.9 million for the next 6 years.
That's a good point, Drew.
He's going to have to stay on long term IR for the next 6 years. Otherwise, they're going to be on the hook.
Now
for
the
that
question
contract.
Is about the insurance they're paying that. I wonder about that because if he's staying, if essentially what they're doing there, if the insurance isn't paying it, is they're paying him. $4.9 million a year just to give themselves $4.9 million of cap space.
That's right.
But if his insurance is paying for it, then they're really not paying anything.
Right. And that's how. And that's not so much. Yeah, that's not so much. You know, in terms of the active roster, but it's something to keep in mind. You know, just for how they fit it all.
They probably also wouldn't mind a right-handed shooting defenseman. Timonen Prong. What's a Prong example? Timonen, Mezeros, Carl. If they sign him, he's a pending UFA. Coburn and Grossman and Bourdon are all left-handed shooting guys. So maybe a right-handed shooting guy would be a target too.
Well, you know, there's a...
Beggars can't be choosers, though.
That's true. And with the Philadelphia Flyers, as in every year, there's never a shortage of news coming out of Philly, and we appreciate them for that.
Yep.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do a post-mortem on the St. Louis Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all the playoffs, all the baseball, all the football, everything on their numerous HD big screens. A great new setup at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Also, summertime out there. It's a nice day out there. Great patio at the Cheer.
Yep.
One of the best patios in Osborne Village. Big patio right up the front. Get to see all the action going on in Osborne. Be sure to check out the Cheer Bar and Grill for everything, really, food and drink, sports, whatever you need. They got it at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Quick segment. We got Bobby Holik coming up in a couple minutes. St. Louis Blues went out with a whimper, let's say, to the Los Angeles Kings, losing in four straight.
And they sure crumbled quick, eh?
Yeah, they did. How much of a difference does Yaroslav Halak being healthy make in that series?
Halak?
Is it Halak or Halak?
Halak.
Halak. I'm going to call him Halak.
Okay. How much? That made a big difference. Brian Elliott's not very good, although he was overrated during the season because of the system he was playing in. See, Steve Mason.
Steve Mason, who had his greatest success when he was in Ken Hitchcock system.
You know, Drew, it kind of seemed like with St. Louis, that's a lot of the playoff momentum, too. Once they got down, everybody talked about they're young, and they can't score. And it seemed like it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, even. They got down, and, oh, this is our learning experience year. We need this year to get... And they just weren't the same team they were against San Jose. And obviously, credit goes to L.A., and I thought L.A. did a terrific job of getting through the trap really early before St. Louis set up. And I thought that was the key to the series, frankly. But having said that as well, I mean, St. Louis never really had the scoring, Yezzy. And against a team like San Jose, who just kind of mails in every year for whatever reason... they needed to fight a little harder, and they needed production from their guys. And you know, you always talk about the depth of a team. We're talking about St. Louis, the best forwards 1-12. No, they have good forwards 1-12, not the best, and they have trouble scoring. The problem is when you don't have a go-to guy, Ezzy, you're counting on a bunch of guys to contribute, like a Patrick Berglund, TJ Oshie. You're counting on a bunch of them to contribute, and when a couple of them don't contribute because they're not the most gifted offensive players. The well runs dry pretty quickly, and that's what happened.
And Andy McDonald and Alex Steen and Matt D'Agostini were injured and then came back and were actually quite effective in the first round. And in the second round, they weren't able to establish their presence. And you're right, and a guy like Patrick Berglund was good in the first round against San Jose. But, you know, the St. Louis Blues... this year, you're right. I mean, speaking of the future looking bright, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the future looks extremely bright in St. Louis as well.
It does. They need another left side defenseman on their top four, though. Shattenkirk, Pietrangelo, and Jackman need to be joined by somebody else up there.
Let me ask you, you know, when they made the big trade a couple years ago, they dealt away Eric Johnson to Colorado, and they got Chris Stewart. And we sort of thought it was a good trade because Chris Stewart had been coming off a real good year in Colorado. Yep. What's wrong with him? He was a healthy scratch for a couple games in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's been junk.
He himself said that he's at a crossroads in his career.
I think so. I mean, like, granted, Kevin Shattenkirk's arguably outplayed Eric Johnson over the same time period.
Agreed. I mean, I still think it was a good trade for St. Louis. Yeah.
There are very few players in the league who have the size and speed combination that Chris Stewart does. It's a matter of focus, motivation, all those things. Those are the things that we really can't tell. The skill level is there. He's got a good shot too. The question is, he's more of a scorer than a passer. But the question is he going to have his head on straight and motivated for 82 games, and does he want to play? Also, I think he's a little bit restricted. He's a little more of a freelancer, and he's a little bit more restricted in Ken Hitchcock's style. Maybe it's not suited to his game.
Yeah, I think, you know, nothing's changed. Chris Stewart's still a very good hockey player, mm-hmm. and the year that he had was not one that he particularly liked at all. But I think you're right. I think, you know, he was moved down to the third line, and then he was a healthy scratch, which I don't think anybody saw coming. I mean, Chris Stewart is the type of guy that, you know, would be extremely, extremely valuable against a team like LA. He can go in there and hit, and he can get timely goals. But, you know, a guy like him needs to play with a playmaking center. He needs to play with an Andy McDonald. He can't play. He's not a third-line checker.
Right.
He's the type of guy that needs to, you know, play 15 to 20 minutes a game. But looking forward, I mean, he's definitely going to be a key piece. And, you know, I look at the St. Louis Blues, and we've talked about this before. One of the teams that impressed me the most this year against the Jets was the Blues. Like TJ Oshie, a former UND guy, very good player. David Perron is the type of guy I thought was one of the most dominant players against the Sharks in that series. He's the type of guy that can take the puck and you know, do a lot of things with it. He's a physical player. So is Oshie. But, you know, the St. Louis Blues, I think, hadn't been in that position for a while. And the LA Kings, you know, simply put, outplayed them. But I think the Blues, again, this year was... They turned their season around for them to finish second in the West and get to the second round. I mean, this was a successful year. But they're still pieces away from being a team that can go to the Stanley Cup Final.
Do they build on that success next year, or do they drop back?
It's going to be hard to match it.
Well, it's going to be hard to finish second in the West again. But, I mean, do you expect that they're still going to be a Western Conference favorite next year, or do you think they're going to be
favorite? They'll be a threat, though.
They'll be a threat. So you think that the future is still bright for St. Louis?
And they're going to have to make some moves. I mean, you've got Langenbrunner and Arnott, and those guys.
They're both so washed up.
I mean, those guys aren't going to be back. The Blues are going to be an active team. This is a team I think that needs to add a couple pieces.
New ownership also coming in.
And I'm sure the ownership will be willing to you know, pick up another player, another top four defenseman. I don't think they're a favorite next year, but I think they're going to be. I would go on a not going out on a limb here. I think they're definitely going to be a playoff team next year.
Yeah, I mean, the talent's there to be a playoff team. The question is, can the other teams in the league, like Vancouver, Chicago, make the necessary adjustments to their rosters to take a step, above a team like St. Louis? And I think personally, the core talent in those two cities, amongst others, is better.
And a Ken Hitchcock team doesn't miss the playoffs very often, do they?
Usually not. Let's leave it there. When we come back, Bobby Holik from HolikOnHockey.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program. He's a former NHLer. He's a former Stanley Cup winner. He's got his own website at www.holikonhockey.com. Bobby Holik, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you. Good to be on again.
Thanks very much for joining us, Bobby. But we want to start with Marty Brodeur, given what he performed in the series against the Flyers. And really, there's probably not very many people in the NHL that know him as well as you do, who got to see him day in and day out. So, you know, can you tell our audience sort of what does Marty Brodeur do on a daily basis that allows him to still compete at this high level as he, you know, approaches 40 years of age?
I actually thought about it very recently, a couple of days ago when I was writing a new blog about the Devils beating the Flyers. And, you know, it was Marty Brodeur or Dominic Hasek or even Patrick Roy. Their common denominator there is tremendous competitiveness. And it's not only in games, it's practice. He doesn't want a single puck to get past him in practice. And that's what makes great players. You know, the Hall of Famers I played with or against, they practice harder than anyone. And Marty's the same way. Every practice, every puck, he's going to be at his best. You cannot take time off and just say, I'll flip the switch and I'll be great again. So having said that, he's, I think that's a, that goes along with being a great player, a great performer, and to play for that long, you always have to be at your best, no matter where it's practice, where it's games, where it's playoffs, where it's the Stanley Cup championships. And he's been doing that. And also realizing, especially last year or so, when the team around him is getting better, he doesn't need to be spectacular. He doesn't need to win games on his own. He just needs to help the team to win, and he's been doing that.
Bobby, much has been made about the Devils coaching staff, Adam Motes, Pete DeBoer, and obviously Larry Robinson. Robinson in particular, you know extremely well. Can you talk about what he's like, obviously, both as an assistant coach and a head coach? And if you think that, you know, there is some speculation he might be in consideration for the Montreal job, if you think he will hop eventually back into head coaching?
Well, Larry is probably one of the most qualified people in hockey in of past, you know, 20 years. Ever since he retired, he came to New Jersey in 1993, and he's one of the difference makers in that organization. I mean, Lou Lamoureux has done a tremendous job as a general manager. Jacques Lemaire put us on the right path for the first 5-6 years that he coached the team. But Larry Robinson was other than a couple of years in LA, he's been a constant. And whether as a head coach or assistant coach, he's also one of the most genuine, nicest people in hockey in general. And he just brings the knowledge, the experience, and the personality that you cannot find in any other package. He's very unique. He's very special. And he's somewhat behind the scenes because he was only head coach for one of those championships. Mm-hmm. But I think he's done more for the organization than very few other people have. And he had a tremendous playing career as a Montreal Canadian and then a little bit of LA King. But he's doing almost just as well as a coach or assistant coach as an advisor. So I doubt he would go to Montreal. I don't think he doesn't need the stress of that position. But, he's a competitor, and the challenge would be great. But I just don't see it happening.
Bobby, in your blog, Whole Week on Hockey, after the completion of the Devils-Flyers series, you had a post about why the Devils beat the Flyers, and you said one of the biggest reasons why the Devils were able to beat the Flyers was because the Flyers didn't respect the Devils. And, you know, in what particular manner did you feel that the Flyers didn't respect the Devils?
Well, I watched the games, and you read the quotes afterwards or before. You know, you read the quotes after the first game, after the second game, before the third game. And the players on the Flyers team, they all talk about, oh, we didn't do this, and we didn't do that, and we need to be better. There's no mention of that New Jersey Devils team is not allowing them to be who they are. You know, there was a speculation that maybe Giroux is playing hurt. Or listen, I recall perfectly the Stanley Cup Finals we played against Detroit Red Wings. We swept them in four games. Everybody said, well, it was easy for you guys because they didn't show up. Well, I hate to tell you, but hockey players always show up. It's just you don't allow them to play the way they want to play. You know, it's the fans and some of the media are just the lack of understanding of the game that maybe the Flyers just didn't understand that the Devils are outplaying them and they needed to change their attitude. They need to respect. I always say, dislike your opponent, especially in the playoffs, but you have to respect their strength. And Flyers didn't do that.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bobby Holik. He's got his website, holikonhockey.com. Bobby, obviously Game 7 between the Caps and the Rangers gets underway a little bit later on this evening. You know, you played in a number of Game 7s as a player. You know, sort of walk us through what a player's mental preparation has to be like ahead of a Game 7.
Well, as a veteran, it's much easier. It's not another game, but you kind of comfortable in the situation. You know, you're a younger player, first shift, you want to get out there as soon as possible, touch the puck, get a hit or be hit, just to feel the game. You know, there's a lot of it. Even if there's sometimes only 48 hours, or now we have had what, 72 hours since the last game, there's a lot of anticipation. The same old question gets asked for three straight days or two straight days. As a player, all you want to do is get on the ice and make something happen. As I said, hit, be hit, make a pass, take a shot, anything will get you into the game mode, and you forget all about the talk and anticipation, the pressure, the intensity. You're back in the game, and you're just playing it on instinct. So you have to learn it as you go along. I read my club was quoting that when he played his first game 7 years ago, the Barons were very calm, and as a matter of fact, they were very relaxed. And that's how you have to do it. You have to let your instinct take over, because there's just no time to think and analyze once the game starts what you're playing for. It's too late. You know, you had time before the game or a couple of days after the game 6. So now it's, I firmly believe most of the players participating in tonight's game can't wait for the first, their first shift, their first action on the ice, and it makes everything go away and you're just playing the game.
Bob, you've played at MSG many times over your career, both as a Devil and as a Ranger. Just quickly about tonight's game, do you have any, is the ice, generally the ice at MSG is supposed to be pretty bad, especially this time of year. Is that going to be a factor in terms of the way the players play the game tonight?
I think the ice has improved because the Garden is going through renovation, three-part renovation tonight. That's one thing they attacked or rebuilt last year was the surface. And I think the ice is much better. I don't think it's and the technology is better, so the ice shouldn't be as much of a factor as people think it is. But, you know, for some reason, I think Rangers are in a tough spot because they find themselves in a position that no one within the organization expected to be. They played game seven in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. They played another game 7 against Capitals. So Capitals came in as underdogs into the playoffs. You know, they qualified as a number 7 seed. So they have nothing to lose. Everything, every win, every game they win is a bonus. So I believe they are a little more relaxed and a little more anxious. But the Rangers, 2 game 7s, and, you know, they've played 14 games in less than a month.
Right.
So did the Caps. But they're still going into it as like, oh, if we win game 7, great. You know, nobody expected any more from us. So it's the atmosphere. It's the, I always say it, most of the game is from the neck up.
Bob, you wrote on HolikonHockey.com about Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, and they didn't play particularly well in the second round series. And in reality, last year against Vancouver was the same situation. Do you have any concerns moving forward about their performance in the playoffs?
Well, I'm not in charge of any of the teams that are looking at and signing them. Maybe, you know, when you say if one of them leaves this summer and goes to a team, there's some speculation of Detroit or any other team. You know, you're signed by a different team. But I don't look that far ahead. I just was analyzing the way they have played. And to me, if you are to be considered one of the great players in the National Hockey League, you have to, in the playoffs, dominate at least some games because you have to make a difference. And yeah, they were good, they were playing well, but the domination factor wasn't there. And to me, that's the kind of shortcomings. Maybe it will come with the years, or I don't want to say playing for a better team, because the National Predators was a pretty good damn team this year. But you have to dominate at least one game in the series to be considered great.
Bobby, the Western Conference Finals start tomorrow. How do you see the Los Angeles Kings Phoenix Coyotes series playing out tomorrow, for the rest of the series?
Well, I think tomorrow is going to be. It might be a little different than the rest of the series because after the long layoff, especially the Kings and the Phoenix. You know, they've been 4 or 5 days now already. There might be a little rust. There might be a little feeling out period where I don't think it's gonna. That series is not gonna start the way. Phoenix's or LA's series ended in high intensity, physical, just going all out. I think the teams will go out there and try to feel each other out in a sense of, are these guys ready to play? You know, the layover in the playoffs is difficult because you players much rather prefer staying in the rhythm of games than having a week off or 5 days off. So the first game might be more hesitant, or the first part of the first game, than the rest of the series. Once they get in the rhythm, it's going to be back to the old playoff hockey.
Bobby, you know, we talked about the West, and we mentioned before the Devils and spoke about the Rangers-Washington series. Who do you think for the Devils, you know, from the New Jersey's perspective, who do you think was a better matchup for them if they want to take the next step to the final?
Well, I initially thought that the long layover between games up to 6 days might hurt them, but they had a few guys banged up from the Flyers series, so the delay, I think they'll be ready to play, but it will be the first time this year in the playoffs that they will be facing a hot goaltender. So there's a difference because they really had a fairly easy time scoring on their shots against Florida, whether it was Clements and Theodore. And then, you know, we all know about Brizgalov not pulling his own weight into Philadelphia. So suddenly, I think it's going to be – it's going to depend how good the goalie is on the other side. I think Devils will continue to control the game with their puck position and with their very efficient forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
But are those shots going to go in like they did in the first two rounds?
Bobby, we'll let you go on this last question. A lot has been made throughout the playoffs about all the shot blocking and how, to some people's opinion, it has sort of been a detriment to the entertainment value. You know, are you in favor of the NHL implementing a rule or a set of rules to lessen the effect that shot blocking could have on the game?
You know what, I come from a different kind of sort of thoughts because I don't like the rules because to alter the game with constantly making new rules, to me, it comes down to shot blocking because there's 30 teams. There's just not enough talent on each team.
Right.
30 teams and the salary cap, you know, the parity is great for some people, but at the same time, you have to dilute the talent pool, so a lot of these teams don't have enough depth. Hardly anyone has enough depth. So they have to resort to this style of collapsing around the net because there's just not enough good players for 30 teams. And, you know, that's a conversation for another day. So, to me, the rules are, you constantly have to alter the rules because you want to create a better product. I think better players create better games. If you get teams that are stacked with talent, they're not going to be blocking shots.
That's right.
They're going to be playing hockey.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Bobby Holík, holikonhockey.com. Thanks, as always, for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Bobby.
Thanks all, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
Let's go to break. That's exactly right. It's a matter of skill.
He's great.
You know, he's great, and it's a matter of skill. If there's enough skilled players in the league, you don't need to.
You don't need to implement
all these rules. There's too many teams.
If you read the article this morning in the Globe about Phoenix. I mean, they talk about they're playing essentially like they used to against the Russians in the Olympics when they had amateurs against their amateurs. Our amateurs being like non-NHLers and their amateurs being their best players.
Right.
And they had to learn how to play without the puck. That's what they're teaching them.
Drew, exactly. you should always be making rule changes for the betterment of the game as a whole, not for the entertainment value. It should be to make the game better.
Well, and the problem is the game is lousy because there's too many players sometimes. Too many teams with enough skill
players. And he's exactly right. And that's what we talked about last week. Nashville didn't know what to do, and they had to hold the puck all the time because all they ever do is block shots.
Normally, exactly. Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're actually going to talk more about this. We'll talk about Eric DeHatchick's article about the three and the key in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Thanks to Bobby Holík of holikonhockey.com for joining us this past segment. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment is brought to you by our good friend David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important decisions you will have to make in life. Don't leave that decision to an amateur. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. First caller through to 780-1290 right now. You'll win a complimentary home consultation from David. So give us a call, 780-1290. First caller through, 780-1290. You'll win a complimentary consultation from David Carr of Monopoly Realty.
Take full care of you.
He took good care of you.
Took good care of me.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure did.
You know, you're getting ready, you're buying your gear, you're moving in. What's the big date again, Richie?
True. Let's not publicize everything about my life.
Why not? We publicize everything about my life. You spent 3 weeks, never mind 3 weeks, spent about 3 months.
The people want to know more about you than they want to
know.
Well,
and the reason why we talked about your life is because your wedding was the most anticipated wedding since Wayne Gretzky and Janet Jones, so...
Appreciate that.
It really was. I mean, and then we've got the dinners and the events coming up in Winnipeg this summer. I mean,
yeah, you're getting like 8 events out of that, Drew.
I expect 2 presents.
I've been to like 14 events for your wedding.
Oh, you haven't been to that many events. Stop exaggerating. You were happy I got married. He gave you an excuse to go on a baseball road trip.
That's true.
Yeah. our good friend Eric DeHatchik wrote an article in the Globe and Mail. Now, Eric's columns are worth reading on a weekly basis.
Best columnist in hockey.
He wrote an article this week talking about how the NHL, in an effort to eliminate the shot-blocking epidemic, should consider something along the lines of the NBA's three-in-the-key rule, which states that you're not allowed to park yourself, really, in the key in the NBA. So he's, you know, speculating the NHL should do something similar. You're not allowed to park yourself, or only a certain number of people are allowed to park themselves in front of the net for a...
Essentially, like, banning a zone defense kind of idea and trying to... In some senses, and trying to make sure you're kind of following your man, and it creates more open ice as opposed to just sitting back and letting the guys skate around the outside.
You can't collapse five guys in front of the net. You can only have so many guys in front of the net before the puck is there. Something along those lines.
So like the idea of 3 seconds in the key would be you can't stand there. You have to move around in and out, right?
That's right.
The other idea around it would be, and he speaks about in the article, you know, having a maximum amount of guys. That's what I was talking to you about last week. A maximum amount of guys in the slot. So you can't have more than three or four defenders in the slot.
Right.
At one time. Three in the slot at one time.
Now, if the puck is there, then it's, you know, fair game. Anybody can go for the puck. But if the puck is on the outside,
right. You
can't have five guys all blocking the net, you know, really, in effect, putting a really fat goalie in the net to see if the puck can ever get through.
The three in the key idea. I mean, these are the ideas that need to be considered because the game right now is... It's ugly.
Okay.
Now, it's a copycat league. So let's say the Devils end up winning the Stanley Cup. Yeah. And they don't employ this system.
Right.
Does this system fall by the wayside? Or is it that there's so many teams that were...
I don't think, first of all, that any rule changes should be implemented for next season.
Well, no. You're going to need time to experiment.
And I think what you have to do is experiment them in other leagues first and even see if they make sense. So this is not something that would be a short-term fix to an issue. Because exactly right, Drew, issues do change and it's a copycat league. But... penalty calls are also way down, and players have adjusted to a point, and I believe that, but I think also they've kind of put their whistles away, and I think part of that, referees, is the fact that they want to lower concussions.
So it's a safety issue. Yeah, clutching and grabbing is a little bit more permitted.
Yeah. Here,
the problem is the talent issue, as Bobby mentioned, but the problem also is Ezzie's coaching, and they don't coach to score, and I think, and now we talked about that, talent's an issue, but there's no reason why on a team with the Rangers that they can't change their system so when Gabrick and Richards are out there, they're far more open than they are against when the other lines are out there. Why can't you do that? Why does the whole team have to play the same system?
It never used to be. You know, you used to have scoring lines and you used to have checking lines.
Right.
And I mean, you know,
still do, but like...
But you don't. I mean, the Rangers have four checking lines. The Rangers have not scored a 5-on-5 goal in over 100 minutes. This is the Stanley Cup Finals. The Stanley Cup playoff, pardon me. They're the best team in the NHL throughout the regular season. They've not scored a 5-on-5 goal in over 100 minutes. It's absurd.
But that isn't just because these guys are willing to shot block. And this is my problem.
That's right.
It's because they're not trying to score 5-on-5.
And I've said this, and Richie said this, we've all said this. We've had Eric Duhatchik on the show, and he's the preeminent hockey writer. And, you know, he references Pierre Paget, who I don't know if Drew mentioned that, but that was who introduced this idea. And I think this is a horrible idea. I don't think this should be even considered at all. I don't think anything like this or any hybrid or form of this. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Shot blocking is a huge part of hockey. And it's not, the reason why scoring is down isn't because guys are closing up the lanes. People have always done that. It's become an art and a science and more of an art and science. It's the no forechecking and this 1-3-1 system that is really slowing everything down. When you go on the penalty kill, all you're trying to do is make sure that no shots get through. That's what penalty killing is. It's blocking shots.
Nobody's complaining about penalty killing.
No. I know it's not complaining about penalty killing, but the idea of limiting guys, I mean, the idea of this key, hockey and
basketball. What about this, Ezzy? What about Scotty Bowman's proposal? I'm sorry to interrupt. What about the Scotty Bowman's proposal? He's talked about it, not necessarily a proposal, but he spoke about it before last year. What about just banning shot blocking?
Well, how do you do that, though?
You can't go down and block a shot.
So can you block? Can you put your shin pads together and block it while vertical?
Yeah,
but you just can't horizontally block a shot.
Yeah,
but that's absolutely ridiculous. Just the idea of that is ridiculous.
What's so bad about it?
Well, what's the reason why that hasn't been done for the first 100 years of hockey?
Because nobody used to block shots. Even you watch a game 10 years ago, not that many people block shots. Craig Ludwig was talked about for a reason because he was like the only big guys who'd block shots all the time.
There might have not been as many block shots, but to say there was few or little is not true.
In the '70s, nobody blocked a shot without a helmet.
But if you go back,
they're wearing armor. If it's going to hurt you, you're not going to block a shot.
They have Kevlar socks they wear now.
If you go back to the '70s, there were still 20 or 30 block shots a game.
We're in the locker room and arguing, and somebody's wearing Kevlar socks. Seriously, no, the Kevlar socks. You think about all the armor they're wearing.
If it's not hurting you, then why wouldn't you do it? So sure, you'll sacrifice your body because you're wearing enough equipment
we
that you don't
it.
Feel
put
the
on
impact.
Light shoulder pads, and they won't be hitting their guys as hard.
So now we
put on light elbow pads, they won't be hitting guys as hard. So you put on light shin pads, they won't be hitting guys as they won't be blocking as many shots.
Here's how you eliminate the shot blocking epidemic. Either you get rid of six.
I don't think it's an epidemic.
How is it not an epidemic? You watch the Rangers and the Capitals. Nobody.
How do you watch that?
You can't.
I'm the biggest hockey fan there is. I can't watch that stuff.
Look, they're not going to get rid of six teams. You get rid of six teams, this isn't an issue. It's not going to happen as much as I'd like it to. Right. Just like Bobby Holik just said. That's not going to happen. Next, then you have to make teams. You have to make people pay to sacrifice their body. Right now, the sacrificing of their body isn't a sacrifice because there's not a significant amount of pain usually if you block a shot properly. Now, if you block it with your back because you're Alex Ovechkin and you don't know what you're doing, then yeah, there's going to be some pain.
Yeah.
But if you block it with your shin pads, well, guess what? Like you said, you're wearing Kevlar socks. If it can stop a bullet, it can stop
a
puck.
And the plastic protectors on your skates now.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys. What's a bigger cause for boring hockey? Clogging up the neutral zone or shot blocking?
Right now?
You're going to both say shot blocking.
Well, I mean, they're both
problems.
They're both problems. But
what's a bigger problem? It's clogging up the neutral zone.
I don't think so.
Hockey is a fluid game. It's not shot blocking. Is not why we're seeing less offense.
I don't think the Rangers and the Caps have had a problem penetrating the zone with speed. I think
that's some factor, but
when you get there and there's eight guys standing in front of the net, you got three Caps guys and five Rangers guys in front of the net. Yeah. No wonder a player with skill can't pick a corner because he's got nowhere to shoot because there's five guys standing in front of him.
Well, I think Montreal beat Washington 2 years ago. It's the same thing, by the way. That's no issue. I mean, it's no surprise. Pittsburgh, too. Montreal beat Boston, Washington, Pittsburgh by doing this and letting Halak play great.
I disagree, and I think that, it used to be the left wing lock. And now, then it went to the 1-3-1 system. And as far as I'm concerned, shot blocking is a huge part of hockey. And I don't think that is the reason why we can say that a defensive system is blocking shots. I think guys know that if you get in a shooting lane, you block a shot. I mean, you've done your job. That's defensive hockey. As far as I'm concerned, you know, we should be looking at players not basically forechecking at all and basically clogging up the neutral zone. I'm not saying they're both not issues. To consider not having shot blocking in hockey, and this is just me speaking,
Would you ever say, ridiculous. Oh my God, there weren't any shot blocks in the game today?
But that's not the issue.
I block shots when I played. I mean, it's fine. It's a part of sacrificing, but it doesn't mean
you have to scheme. Your scheme shouldn't be based around shot blocking.
So if you can't shot block, can you not tip pucks either? Can you not put your stick in front of a puck?
You can't lie down in front of the puck all the time.
You just can't put five guys in front of the net so that the offensive team has nowhere to actually shoot for.
But you're playing defense.
And it's being honored on TV as if like it's a bet. I know there's a certain element of toughness that goes along with it, sure. But like I'd like to see a little bit on the highlights once in a while. Instead of shot blocking, have a couple nice dangles.
So when
God forbid they show skill on TV about guys making a good effort.
Okay, so if you're penalty killing,
you're not seeing any shot blocking in the World Hockey Championship
If you're Tanner Glenn, there should be. Why? Because you're preventing the other team from scoring.
The talent's too good for the shot blockers. The talent in the World Hockey Championships for most of the top teams prevent the shot blockers from having any sort of impact.
So Parise is a good penalty killer. How often does he shot block?
He does block shots.
How often?
I don't know. I don't keep stats on that. But if you're Tanner Glass and you're penalty killing...
I'm not paying to see Tanner Glass play hockey!
I'm making a point here. If you're Tanner Glass and you're penalty killing and a guy gets the puck at the blue line and you skate out, are you just supposed to not drop down and block a shot? You're just supposed to let him shoot?
Yeah, you know what? Wouldn't that be better for the game?
No.
Why? You'd rather see Tanner Glass block a shot than the puck get through and there be a scoring chance?
No.
It goes both ways.
I'd rather not see Tanner Glass play in the NHL.
That you guys
he's a respectable fourth-line left winger. But in this day and age, a respectable fourth-line left winger is not what anybody pays to see. Or any age, frankly.
Exactly. I don't pay to see him.
He's a hardworking guy, and he does what he's supposed to do. But nobody pays to see him. And you want to see offense. So if it means taking out that kind of stuff for those guys.
Do you honestly think shot blocking is going to be taken out of hockey?
I don't think it will be.
Okay.
I think an element of it should be, yes.
We watched the Rangers three times this year. We saw him four times. We saw him in person three times. This is the Eastern Conference champion. You're a pretty good Rangers guy. You were a big Rangers guy when the Jets left after 1.0. Yeah. You know, how many times were you tremendously entertained watching the Rangers this year?
The games against the Jets were borderline unwatchable. 2-1 game early in the year in Winnipeg, and then the game here, the Rangers won the second game, and they kind of took over later on, was a little more watchable. If you watch the games, the game we went to in New York was dreadful, and the game that the Jets played in New York and got blown out, I think, shout out there, was also dreadful. Like, it's pretty unwatchable hockey.
And
to the casual fan, I mean, the hardcore fan's going to watch the Jets, but some guy in Calgary's not watching Jets-Rangers.
And if you're the number one team in the Eastern Conference, one of the top teams in the NHL, shouldn't your games always be watchable? You know, if you're that good and that skilled,
the best thing that can happen to a team like the Rangers for the fans is then lose, and then they don't think that method will necessarily work.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it boils down to. That if it's a copycat league, so if that system proves to not work, teams will maybe adopt the Devils system, which was more of an aggressive forechecking style, or the Ottawa system,
right.
Also aggressive forechecking. Those were the entertaining games this year.
That's right.
You know, those were the entertaining
exactly
games.
Right,
the Rangers games were dreadful.
They were dreadful.
It was just boring hockey. Granted, there was a huge disparity in talent on the ice, which certainly factors in, but I want to see, even if there's a disparity in talent, I want to see that the Rangers are dominant. I want to see a dominant team rather than a team that's good but boring as all
and
hell.
And they got really good goaltending.
Yeah.
You'd rather see Detroit.
Exactly, where you can appreciate the skill. I don't appreciate the Rangers for their skill.
The Red Wings still block shots, though.
But you don't worry about the Red Wings blocking shots as the takeaway from the game. You talk about Datsyuk and Zetterberg and how great skilled they all are.
Well, they generally don't block as much as many other teams. You know why? Because they have the puck on their stick.
Exactly. Makes a world of difference. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to hit on some more NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
By the way, Timmy gets that up. Who says that the arguments only are on during the air? We were going at it about shot blocking during the break.
Yeah, well, that's because we're
getting heated.
There's some passion about it. Yes, there's some passion around it.
Getting heated.
Yeah, exactly right. It's there's no right answer.
Edzie actually tried to do a shot during the break, but we blocked it.
We blocked it. That was a good move on our part. There's no right answer to it, and it's a matter of opinion. You know, I fall on one side, you fall on one side, and that's all.
As long as we don't fall on the ice, it's good.
Well, I don't play anymore. How is hockey going? You've been a few games back in ice hockey now. First time in what, is it about 10 years?
7 or 8 years.
Yeah,
it's great. No, I've wanted to play hockey for a while. It's going great. It's awesome to play with your friends and stuff. It's going awesome.
Let's be honest. I know the guys on that team. Wouldn't call very many of them your friends.
Frenemies.
Frenemies. Frenemies would be the word to use there.
Timmy, let's go.
NHL news and notes.
Very quick news and notes as we're right up against, we'll have to come back with rapid fire pretty quickly. You know, Greg Jamieson, the whole brouhaha in Phoenix had another chapter, I guess, this
questions
week?
Like this we don't need to worry about quickly.
Explain yourself.
I'm kidding, Drew. Keep going.
Thank you. It wasn't even a question. You know, was that press conference needed?
No, it was like, it was just Batman talking to himself in the mirror and somebody got a video of it. Like, I can't handle any more of these Phoenix stories. Nobody even covers it anymore. None of the writers even cover it because nobody cares. It's like, Gary, stop lying. Just tell us when the deal's done. If it's done or they're moving to Quebec. That's enough. Stop lying to everybody.
How much longer? I mean, you know, we're almost in May 31st, which was when the Jets were announced back. We're 19 days away from there. Do you think the Coyotes are in Phoenix next year or are they somewhere else?
I mean, it depends on who wants to lose money. In reality, is Glendale going to lose more money or is the owner going to lose money? Somebody's going to lose money because nobody cares about the team there.
The timing of it was really weird because they weren't announcing that he had purchased the Coyotes, which should be the only the only press conference we have at this point, especially when the Phoenix Coyotes are going to the next round. But he still wants a significant amount of money from the city of Glendale, and that's the problem. And I don't know if Goldwater is going to get involved again. The watchdog group that obviously everybody remembers from last year. But he's not buying the team outright. And the NHL has lost a lot of money on this team. And they're not going to be selling the team for a discount. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm still skeptical, and I'm not the only one.
And, I mean, it just seems to never end. That's all it is. It's just a never-ending story.
Well, now it's a never-ending story that nobody cares about except for Quebec City.
Exactly.
Before is a never-ending story that nobody else cared about except for Winnipeg and Quebec City.
Right. Rick Dudley is going to be, eventually, he's going to leave Toronto and become the new assistant general manager of the Montreal Canadiens.
Mm-hmm.
We expect that to happen. They're still trying to figure out the timing and everything because he's been heavily involved in the in the draft preparations for the Leafs. I personally don't have a problem with Toronto wanting to hold on to him until after the draft.
That's fine. My issue, and I think I agree, because you've been doing all this draft prep, so you don't want to give a guy away who's, you know, you're picking fifth and then Montreal's picking third, so he's going to have all the draft info. Having said that, you know, talking about the compensation for these guys, I'm not so sure I'm not on board with that, because the general consensus is if a guy's getting a promotion, which he is in this case, then you let him go. And I have no issue with that.
Right.
And if you're going to start putting prices on these guys as you for compensation, then, you know, what's the distinction? Is a guy going to move? You know, what if a guy moves over to another job and he's given a fake title even though he's got the same? It's a very gray area. So I think the rule is you let a guy go for a promotion and there's no compensation, even though Brian Burke wants compensation.
I'm not sure.
Kenny Holland, a couple of them too. I just don't think it's necessary.
I don't think, compensation isn't necessary, but I really don't have a problem with Brian Burke saying, you can go.
Well, that's fair.
Wait till after the draft, because otherwise you're leaving with company secrets.
That's fair.
Yeah, it is. It's always weird around the draft time, because Drew, you mentioned company secrets, and there's a lot of secrets around the draft, because it's not just who you're targeting. There's a lot of trading around the draft now.
Yeah.
And posturing, and who you're going to trade up, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, so, I mean, the whole compensation, I mean, that's, I don't know, that's an issue that's above me, definitely, but... you know, I'm a big fan of Rick Dudley, and obviously Mark Bergevin has some history with him in Tampa, and obviously the Chicago connection there too. But
it's Dudley
a weird time.
Dudley was responsible for Ottawa's resurgence way back in the day. Tampa Bay, Chicago. Yep. He's given credit to a lot of teams taking the turn. So I think actually in terms of the hire, now that we were really asked about that, I think it's a great hire.
Yeah, and obviously this is Bergevin's time. He's finally become a GM, and now Dudley has been the guy, and now he's not the guy. He's a guy that can help a guy like Bergevin, because Bergevin, I think Bergevin, they got their guy and they got the right guy, but there is going to be pressure on him. I mean, these decisions with Scott Gomez and PK Subban and Carey Price and draft picks and who are they going to move? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him, and. You know, it can't get any worse in Montreal. But having a guy like Rick Dudley, who you know from previous franchises, and you know he's been around and had success, I think they know what they're doing now in Montreal. They're not going to get it wrong this time.
And you need a cap guy too, because Dudley's not great with the cap.
Exactly right. And I mean, for Mark Bergevin as a rookie, it can't hurt to have an experienced general manager to run things past
100%.
Right beside him.
You want to have both. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
good hire.
Exactly. It makes a lot of sense there. Let's go to break. When we come back, we got one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
There was a goal that Drew remembers. It was back in 1945.
That was amusing. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment.
Rapid fire.
We'll deal with. Little do people know that we're way more mean to each other off air than we are on air.
It's ironic. We should actually do a behind the scenes show, behind the music or behind the mics. It would just end with all of us crying to each other.
Illegal Curve goes to the Palomino Club.
Not sure what that's all about, but anyways. On Thursday, the website Deadspin published an article with accompanying photographs chronicling Blackhawks forward Patrick Kane's recent adventures in Madison, Wisconsin. According to numerous reports, Kane spent the Cinco de Mayo weekend drunk and disorderly, bar hopping around the college town. He allegedly also attempted to choke a female and allegedly used anti-Semitic slurs, all the while wearing a T-shirt that depicted a previous drunken adventure he had in the back of a Vancouver limousine. If you are the Blackhawks, when have you reached your breaking point with Patrick Kane's drunken adventures?
Did he blame the juice for AstroTurf?
I'm not sure about that or not. I can't answer that question.
I don't know what to say about... I actually don't know what to say.
Remus will tweet out the article in case you haven't seen the photos. They are amazing.
He's trash. Does everybody know this? Like, it's no secret. He's a good hockey player, but he seems like he's trash off the ice. Like,
Patrick Kane...
Look at the pictures.
I think all you can say is he likes to party. The anti-Semitic things, if that's true, aren't cool, but...
Also the choking. The choking's also pretty good.
The choking.
Again, allegedly. I can't stress it enough. Allegedly.
Yeah. Is he allegedly out for drinks with Dimitri Young?
No, not necessarily out with Dimitri Young.
Wow, these guys.
Not Dimitri Young. Delman Young. That's Dimitri's brother.
Unbelievable, though. I mean, it's just...
In this day and age of cameras being everywhere.
He's just an idiot.
Yeah,
an idiot. Knows that. They knew that when they drafted him, though. He's an idiot. He's just good at hockey. But we were talking about it off air. I mean, if you can turn a guy like Patrick Kane, if you are sick of his antics, you can turn him into two really, really good young players. And maybe they're a little cheaper and they're a little bigger. You need a little more grit. I mean, you can explore it. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they explored it.
If the Blackhawks
doesn't mean they're going to trade. I wouldn't be shocked if they explored it.
And Patrick Kane is one of the best young hockey players in the NHL.
He hasn't lived up to his expectations.
Up to his expectations. I was just going to say, Patrick Kane kind of seems like, you know, that friend that you have and you go out and you know he's going to drink too much and you know he's going to say certain things, and then by the end of the night you don't even want to be around him. That's the kind of the image I get, the way he parties
and
goes out.
Yeah.
He just seems like someone that, you know, he doesn't know his limits.
We have a lot of friends like that.
Yeah. Most of our friends, I would argue, would be about that.
But, you know what, I know these are allegations, but, I mean, stuff like that, I mean, we all don't condone.
A positive note, he didn't assault a cab driver this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. That was nice of him to save somebody.
Yeah, you know.
Look at his stats past 2 years, though. I mean, 73 points in 73 games 2 years ago, and this year 66 points in 82 games. So he hasn't... you would assume he was going to continue to ascend. He's now 23, so 23 to 26, 24 to 27 is about your prime years. He's taken steps back the past two seasons from his breakout season in 2009-2010. So, the question also needs to be presented whether or not his off-ice issues and maybe parting has been contributed to his on-ice play.
It's a fair question. Prior to the opening game of the Western Conference Finals, the Los Angeles Kings have commissioned the building of a 12 to 14 foot replica of a Stanley Cup made out of sand. In addition to the Sandley Cup, there will be a life-sized sand depiction of Jonathan Quick and various Kings jerseys made out of sand. If you choose one hockey-related item to be made out of sand, what would you want to see created?
I want to jump in here first. First off, that's one of the coolest things I've ever heard. That a Stanley Cup made out of sand and hockey players made out of sand. You know what? I'm going to say that I would like to see a 18-foot by 24-foot replica of Drew Mandel in sand right in front of the Staples Center. That's what I would like to see.
I'm not sure how hockey-related that is.
You host a hockey show.
Yeah, fine. I don't know if we're as appreciated in California as we are in Winnipeg.
I didn't realize that this had to be in California, but I mean, if this was at Winnipeg Beach or something, I'd like to see 18-foot by 20-foot Drew Mandel. I would definitely like to see that. Rich?
I don't really know how to answer the question or how to follow that up. If I had to make something of sand?
Yeah, something hockey-related out of sand. What would you choose?
How do you top the Stanley Cup? I mean, the fact that they've done that's pretty cool. I mean, that's the ultimate prize.
I'm assuming the Gretzky statue outside the stadium, they already have one, but one of sand would be pretty cool because it's LA.
Yeah. Okay.
Another one. What about, the infamous 2010 Crosby throwing his gloves up? Maybe that would be kind of cool to have that immortalized in sand when he throws up
sand?
His gloves.
I'm not 100% sure how the texture of the sand is when
it's
made, but.
White sand?
Dark sand?
I don't know about these, but anything out of sand, anything commission. When you can commission out of sand, I think you're doing okay in terms of interest sake.
That's pretty cool. I got to give them two thumbs up in LA for doing that.
The good times just keep coming for Capitals goaltender Braden Holtby, as on Thursday his fiancée gave birth to a healthy baby boy.
Yep.
Named Benjamin Hunter Holtby.
Yep.
My parents are calling at the moment. It's good to see that they're listening.
Yeah, I know.
There's no word if the middle...
I got a call from my friend during the last break. He didn't know we were on air.
Yeah, there you go.
I didn't get any calls.
Friends and family are listening very well again. The baby's name was Benjamin Hunter Holtby. There is no word if the middle name Hunter is a tribute to Caps coach Dale Hunter or if it is just a coincidence.
I'm pretty sure...
If you were going to name your son and or daughter after an NHL head coach, which head coach would you choose?
My name is first name Hunter. And Hurst Helmsley or Holtby. Triple H?
Well,
Triple H.
So you're voting for Hunter Hurst Holtby.
Yeah.
Triple H. That's good. Well, I have a nephew. My sister's son is named Hunter, and my mother's maiden name was Hunter. So I have a soft spot here because my nephew was named after my mom's maiden name, which is Hunter. So I believe that's what Braden Holtby said as well. Hunter's a common name, but I like the name Hunter. I hope Hunter's listening right now, and my sister's listening because he's the best nephew out there. But I think that, it's great. And the players were talking about it. You know, Braden Holtby, good for him. He was the third string goalie, and now he has a child. He's going into game 7. He's one of the best stories in the playoffs so far, and good for him on the birth of his son. But I think if I could be named after any coach's name, it's got to be Claude. Come on.
Claude Ginsburg.
Timmy's got one.
It rolls off the lips.
Yeah, I think Hunter is actually his mom's maiden name.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, there you go. So there's some good explanation for that. Anyways, appreciate that. Final question in rapid fire.
What about, like, Tippett?
Tippett Pollock.
Tippett Pollock?
Or just Noel. You've heard the name Noel before.
Yeah.
You've dated a couple Noels, haven't you?
Quenville?
Hitchcock Mandel?
Hitchcock.
Earlier this week, after quote-unquote winning the Russian presidential election, new/old Russian president
winning.
Vladimir Putin celebrated like most presidents do by playing in a hockey game against former Soviet hockey superstars. After the game was tied at the end of regulation, the referees decreed a shootout would determine the winner. Putin scored a suspicious goal for his team of amateurs.
Sounds like the Russian basketball game against the States.
And former Detroit Red Wings great Slava Fedosov suspiciously missed the net entirely on his shot. The Russian amateurs defeated the Russian superstars by a 5-4 margin. Putin finished the game with one goal, one assist, and the shootout winner. What is the greater athletic feat, Putin's on-ice performance from this past week, or former North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il's 1994 golf outing, where he allegedly shot a 38-under par round of 34, including 11 holes in one, the first and only time he played the game of golf?
The answer is neither. Prince Edward doing the weather on BBC.
That's not an athletic feat.
You have to move.
What about Gerald Ford playing at University of Michigan?
That would be a viable answer. One that probably had no, you know, there was no fixing involved in that one.
What about Bill Clinton playing the saxophone?
Also not an athletic feat very much, but, you know, we'll deal with that.
There's no fixing to going along with that, sure, but...
Yeah, but no, that was probably...
Putin looked pretty good. He looked like he could play for our team.
Yeah, definitely could play for our team.
The Jets or the illegal curve hockey team? Which one? I'm not sure which
Kim
one.
Kim Jong-il's wasn't mini golf. It was regular golf.
Regular
right?
golf, yeah. He shot a regular golf round of a 38 under par of 34.
Where did you dig that up?
Well, you haven't heard that one?
It's well documented.
They golf together.
That's right. We're old friends, right?
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Pretty sure the KGB is coming to arrest me right now. Anyways, Richie, you can start cheers and jeers.
Well, Drew, I'm going to give my cheer to Larry Brooks for basically giving it to John Tortorella and telling him he needs to play the offensive players in this big game, Game 7, Stepan and Kreider, but both going back up, and they can play a different way. They don't have to play this defensive style. And that's what needed to be said, and I'm happy that somebody went out and said it because it's enough already.
Brooksy.
And another cheer to Roy McGregor and to Hatrick for turning out some real material this week.
As he cheered you.
Brooksy.
What do you want, Brooksy?
I'm going to cheer Vladimir Putin's hockey. No.
What the hell kind of question is that?
I'm going to cheer shot blocking. I love shot blocking.
Okay.
I want to see 150 shots blocked every game. I love it when my boys Mark Stewart and Tanner Glass block shots for the Jets. It's a skill. It's an art. It's a science. Shot blocking is not the problem. It's clogging up the neutral zone. That's the problem. So I'm going to cheer shot blocking and shot blockers.
I'm going to cheer Winnipeg Jets defenseman Zach Bogosian. If you follow him on Twitter, at Bogogo, B-O-G-O-G-O, _44.
New number.
Exactly. New number this year. He'll be number 44 for the Jets. If you follow him on Twitter and if he reaches 25,000 followers by noon on Sunday, he's going to donate money to the Winnipeg Jets Foundation.
Okay, really? So got to follow him. If you don't already follow him, follow him.
Exactly. Follow him. We'll tweet out his username and everything. Follow him on Twitter at Bogogo _44.
What's he at right now, Drew?
Hang on. Let me get up there. I got to scroll up. Right now he's up to, I believe, 20,500
or so. Okay, so Jets fans out there, make sure you follow Bogogo 44.
Bogogo _44.
On Twitter, not in real life.
On Twitter. Pardon me. He's up 20,648 followers.
Just below you.
Exactly. Just below me. That's it for this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guest, Josh Cooper of the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville, Bobby Holik from HolikOnHockey.com, and Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. Big thank you to our
show, huh?
A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com for all your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Tim, for Michael Remus behind the glass. A happy Mother's Day to all mothers out there.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Exactly. That was my mom actually calling to saying she got the flowers for Mother's Day. So, you know.
Tomorrow, Drew.
A little bit early. They only deliver on Saturdays. The point is,
you can deliver your own flowers?
Not important
right
now.
You're a great son,
Drew. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.